Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Tallahassee Regional Airport. Offering service through U.S. Airways with direct flights from Tallahassee to Charlotte and Washington, D.C., and over 200 connections to destinations around the globe. Fares and information available online at usairways.com. Lisa Miller and Associates, offering strategies to solve legislative, regulatory, and business development challenges. Every challenge offers new opportunities for individually tailored client solutions. Online at lisamillerassociates.com. And from the Florida AFL-CIO, representing over 500,000 union members, retirees, and their families, committed to building a better future for all Floridians by promoting healthy communities, economic justice, and dignity in the workplace, online at flaflcio.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
The 2014 Florida lawmaking session is officially underway, and Governor Rick Scott gives his State of the State address.
Let's keep working.
Some Floridians in places other than the Capitol seem to like the way the state is going.
The buildings, it's more shopping, more boutiques, the roads seem like they've gotten a little bit better, the construction seems like it's progressing very fast.
Others, maybe not so much.
Things I'd like to see are the simple things, like the infrastructure. Fix the roads, get the traffic lights working right.
We'll also find out what were the first bills to pass during this year's session and what other issues are either on the fast track or perhaps headed for legislative oblivion. I'm Tom Flanagan. Welcome to the 2014 Florida Lawmaking Session and Capitol Report. Just a few hours after the official start of the Florida lawmaking session, Governor Rick Scott stood before a joint meeting of the House and Senate to deliver his fourth State of the State speech. In keeping with his long-standing slogan, "Let's get to work," he repeatedly mentioned the number of private sector jobs created in Florida since he took office.
460,000 new private sector jobs since the end of 2010.
But the governor was quick to assert the Sunshine State's rebound had only come after the departure of his predecessor and probably future gubernatorial opponent, Charlie Crist.
But that's not where a state was headed a few years ago. Like Washington, Florida's economy was driven into the ground by spending which some called free money.
A theme Governor Scott returned to again and again.
And unlike the previous administration, which lost almost 1 million jobs, we have added almost 500,000 jobs in 3 years.
The governor had some specific items in this year's legislative wish list, such as rolling back the increase in vehicle registration fees that was used to help prop up the state budget over the past several years, also exempting more businesses from the state's corporate income tax, as well as stripping from the state's universities the ability to charge higher tuition.
We want to get rid of the 15% increase and inflationary increase on tuition.
All this was summed up in a new slogan for Governor Scott, which he also repeated at numerous places in the course of his speech.
Let's keep working.
The governor's State of the State address was followed immediately by counterblasts from legislative Democrats. Senate Minority Leader Chris Smith.
We're sending, as Floridians, billions of dollars to Washington just to watch those dollars go all around the nation and not come back to Florida. Over $50 billion. That we do not bring back to Florida because of the refusal to expand Medicaid.
And House Minority Leader Perry Thurston.
Investing in jobs and innovation for Floridians, protecting our land and water, and promoting public safety and health, as well as our state's great diversity and workforce, affordable health coverage for all. These are our top priorities.
It's not only the political types who have thoughts on what's important, though. Everyday Floridians have some ideas, too. Several Florida public radio stations took to the streets this week and got these comments.
Anson Curtis, Tallahassee, Florida, 32301. They're locking up a lot of people, and they happen to be mostly black. I don't know if that's still going on, a black and white thing, but I've been in there. There's a lot of black people in there, man.
The minimum wage is so low that I don't understand how people are able to survive when the cost of living is so high. Kelly Reed, I live in Lutz, Florida.
Simple job creation. It doesn't have to be fancy. Robert Schutt from Tampa. I'm a retired engineer. Things I'd like to see are the simple things like the infrastructure, fix the roads, get the traffic lights working right, the water system, things like that, that have been deteriorated over the years, the bridges.
Sherry Thompson. I live in Tallahassee. My brother and sister-in-law live in a very depressed area around Cape Kennedy. The prospects for them getting employment in that area with the death of the space program, there is nothing moving into that area to take up the slack.
My name is John Stewart. I live in Miami, Florida now, and I'm a chef. I think the state has greatly improved with the buildings. There's more shopping, more boutiques. The roads seem like they've gotten a little bit better. The construction seems like it's progressing very fast, and ultimately it'll bring more people, more tourism, and really help us all out as Floridians.
Hi, I'm Liz Morgan. I own Liz Morgan PR Public Relations in Jacksonville, Florida. And I would really like to see the state bring back more film incentive to bring film production back to our state. At one time, we were like the third state in the country with production and movies and TV shows, and has great economic impact.
I'm Dale Stout. I live here in Jacksonville, Florida. I'm a realtor as well as own a food truck and in the process of trying to open a restaurant. If we could be able to get some funding to create new business concepts, it'd be nice to be able to see if we get some growth from that.
My name is Jennifer Linus, and I'm a hairstylist, and I think it's of utmost importance that we have affordable health care for everyone, especially in my field, because when you're an entrepreneur, you just can't afford to get insurance that covers yourself.
My name is David Johnson. I'm employed here at Panera Bread, and I think that medical marijuana should be on the bill for a lot of things. Like, my partner has a lot of back surgeries, so like he can't really do another one. So like that helps him out.
What is working in Florida is we still have inexpensive quality education, higher education, for an inexpensive price. Andrew Jones, professor of mathematics, Florida A&M University. I live in Tallahassee.
Hi, I'm Julian Valme. I'm a dancer, originally from Miami, Florida, but moved to Tampa to pursue a degree. I know this is a big issue nationally, but I believe that the gay rights movement isn't as powerful in the state right now, and not just gay marriage, but all human rights. There are many cities and many counties that still have the right to fire a person due to their sexual orientation.
My name is Betsy Skip from Miami, Florida. As a guardian ad litem, I have had firsthand experience with the Department of Children and Families, the courts, and the children I advocate for. The status of protecting all children in Florida is in a state of total chaos, from the number of children's deaths to the lack of education and even of empathy. If we aspire to the notion that the children are our future, then we need to value the dignity and worth of all of our children.
Still to come on Capitol Report, as the Senate passed bills aimed at cracking down on sexual predators, critics say the measures likely won't prevent the majority of crimes against children.
Look at the empirical evidence, look at the research, and let's start doing things that are preventative instead of reactive.
Is opposition to more changes to the so-called warning shot bill decreasing as it goes through the legislative process? The measure's sponsor thinks so.
That's because of the process and folks adding good amendments. Nobody has the, quote, silver bullet, so it's an effort.
After many Florida lawmakers found the state's present school grading system didn't make the grade, it seems some changes may be in the works. And Florida lawmakers consider expanding county's local option sales tax power to include the prevention of homelessness.
Support for Capitol Report is provided by the Able Trust, encouraging businesses to hire workers with disabilities. Information about the benefits of hiring people with a wide range of disabilities is available on the web at lookatmyability.org. The Able Trust. Empowerment. Education. Employment.
As Florida Senate President Don Gates promised, his chamber passed several bills on the first day of session aimed at denying convicted sex offenders the chance to hurt children. But as Jessica Palumbo reports, critics of the crackdown say it does nothing to prevent first-time offenses, which they say make up the majority of crimes against kids.
For Dina Thompson, the sex predator legislation is personal. The mother from the Jacksonville suburb of Orange Park said she was at the Capitol Tuesday because of her daughter, Summer.
Summer, who is a twin, was walking home from school October 19, 2009, and she was abducted and murdered and subsequently found 2 days later in the Georgia landfill.
Summer was 7 years old when a neighbor killed her. For almost 5 years, her mother has been advocating for educational programs in public schools to teach other children how to avoid danger.
As a mother in this situation, I can't help but wonder or think, if Summer had been given the opportunity to receive that program, would I still be talking to all these people? Would I still be here today?
The man who killed Summer had no sex crimes on his record. Thompson acknowledges the bill package Gates calls the centerpiece of the session is not aimed at preventing first-time offenses.
As far as Summer's case, unfortunately, none of this really would have made a difference for her.
But she says she supports increased monitoring and penalties for convicted offenders nonetheless.
I can't change it for myself. I can't change it for anyone else that has already had this happen to them. But hopefully, with this new laws coming in, we'll be able to help other people. And by getting them educated.
The measures passed Tuesday make it more likely for sex offenders to be referred to civil commitment proceedings upon their release from prison, meaning more of them could be committed to a mental facility or subject to community monitoring. The bills also impose longer prison sentences and monitoring periods after release, and they increase requirements for reporting an offender's whereabouts, including noting whether they're on a college campus. In his opening remarks, Gates said over the past 15 years, 594 Florida sexual offenders had been caught but then reoffended after their release.
We will protect our children, and we will scorch the earth against sexually violent predators. And we're going to start today because we cannot waste one more day. And we cannot lose one more child.
But critics of the proposed laws call them well-intentioned, but ultimately nothing more than feel-good legislation. Florida Action Committee President Gail Coletta says Gates is pushing something that won't make children safer.
I understand where he's coming from, and I admire that his intent and his belief to make Florida a safer state. But instead of saying this is going to be the most unfriendly place for sex offenders, it should be, his statement should have been, this is going to be the safest place for children.
Coletta's group advocates for what it calls an evidence-based approach to sex offender legislation. She says the new laws employ more of the tactics that haven't worked, that is, imposing harsh punishments on all sex offenders regardless of their risk for committing future offenses. She advocates for risk assessments to be administered before sentencing. And she says violent sex offenders released from prison need step-down housing to help them reacclimate to society.
Because some of these guys will be like 30-plus years that they have not been living amongst the rest of us, and now they're going to be given $100 and a bus ticket.
With research showing more than 95% of sexual offenses are committed by first-time offenders, Coletta agrees with Thompson that education is the most important factor in preventing more cases like Summers. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Jessica Palumbo.
A measure inspired by the story of a Jacksonville woman who received a lengthy prison term for firing a warning shot unanimously cleared another Senate hurdle today. As Sasha Cordner reports, it's the second time around for the so-called warning shot bill in that same committee.
Last month, the bill stalled after undergoing multiple changes, and time ran out in a Senate Judiciary Committee hearing. So on the first day of the 2014 legislative session, Baker Republican Senator Greg Evers got a second chance to vet his bill.
It allows for a person that if they threaten the use of force that would otherwise be permissible if they actually did that force, it allows them to be free from prosecution for just the threatening of the force, whether that's displaying a firearm or whatever.
Marissa Alexander fired a warning shot during an alleged domestic dispute with her husband. She initially claimed self-defense, but a judge said that defense didn't apply. She later received a mandatory minimum prison term of 20 years for aggravated assault without the intent to kill. Alexander is currently awaiting a new trial. A Senate measure says a person cannot be charged with aggravated assault for threatening to use force under Florida's 10 to 20 life statute, but the House version already heading to the floor does not. The new change made at the request of state attorneys is opposed by Duval County Sheriff John Rutherford.
Florida sheriffs don't believe that that we should take out the minimum mandatory for aggravated assault. If they're actually convicted of a crime, then it's not self-defense. So it doesn't make sense. If you're convicted of a crime, you're going to be looking at 10-20 life. So it doesn't make sense to pull it. You don't need to pull it out because if it's self-defense, you're not going to be sentenced for anything.
The bill has had the support of the Florida Public Defenders Association, but a provision now contained in both the House and Senate version has Alachua County Public Defender Stacy Scott a bit worried. It allows for a person deemed not guilty to petition to have their record expunged, but she says the current language appears to give prosecutors sole discretion over that person's record.
When they choose to drop a case, they list reasons why they dropped a case. They may list that they dropped a case because a person acted in self-defense and make that finding, which then would allow a person to apply to have their record expunged. Or they may list another reason. They may say insufficient evidence. They may say victim does not wish to proceed. So in essence, subsection 1 of the amendment gives sole discretion to the state attorney to decide whether a person whose charges were dropped by them would be eligible for expungement.
A new change all parties did agree on, tacked onto the bill Tuesday, was brought forth by St. Augustine Republican Senator John Thrasher. It seeks to further clarify how people can legally threaten to use force.
So I think this amendment basically will not inadvertently subject a person to criminal penalties if he or she makes threats or bluffs to use deadly force when the person would have been authorized under existing law to use actual force.
The measure next goes to its last stop, Thrasher's Senate Rules Committee. Endeavor says there could be more changes ahead as he works to iron out concerns. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
A revamp of Florida's troubled school grading system is now moving through the legislature after receiving approval from the Senate's Education Committee today. But as Lynn Hatter reports, even the bill's sponsor says he has more work to do to make sure the end product is better than the system that exists now.
Florida schools are funded on an A to F scale, and those grades carry great weight in determinations of state funding, local property values, and whether businesses want to open up shop nearby. But Miami Democratic State Senator Dwight Bullard, a social studies teacher himself, says school grades can't be counted on the same way other grades are.
When the health department gives a restaurant an F grade, you know not to eat there. You know, when a student gets an F grade in school, you know that that student has not completed any of the work. So we have a school grading formula that doesn't speak in the same psychological means that grading falls in normal human understanding.
The bill would remove bonus points schools can earn, as well as eliminating automatic triggers that cause a school's grade to drop. But the de-emphasis on high school grading factors like the number of kids taking SAT and ACT and enrolling in advanced placement or international baccalaureate courses has Duval County School Superintendent Nikolai Vitti concerned. He wants the proposed grading system to take more factors into consideration for high schools.
At the end of the day, a university doesn't look at whether a kid passed or didn't pass an end of course exam. They look at ACT, SAT, and PERT. And for kids, mainly poor kids and minority kids, we are seeing more kids taking the ACT, SAT, and more kids being college ready. This is as real as it gets.
An amendment from Tallahassee Senator and Florida Association of District School Superintendents head Bill Monford would have put those measures back in place for high schools, but the language did not make it onto the bill. The Senate proposal allows a one-year pause on penalties associated with poor performance, even though schools would continue receiving grades. The move comes as the state continues implementing both a new statewide assessment and locally developed end-of-course exams. But Bay County Superintendent Bill Husfeld argues districts need more time before the changes go into effect.
We're not asking you to delay holding us accountable. We just don't think the grading is going to work while we are building the test platform. We don't think it's going to work. There should not be an EOC for every course out there. We can't do it. We cannot manage it. It's not going to happen and work the way you think it's going to work right now.
The Senate Education Committee did make two changes to the proposal. One would create a permanent exemption for children with complex disabilities from state testing, a response to recent concerns about the appropriateness of assessing severely disabled children. The State Superintendent Association has called for a three-year transition to a new accountability structure, but lawmakers and officials at the Department of Education have rejected that idea. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
In this, the Sunshine State, there are financial incentives for putting solar panels on homes. A state constitutional amendment already stops counties from charging higher property taxes on homes whose value is increased when solar cells are installed. Now, as Regan McCarthy reports, clean energy advocates are backing a bill which would extend that tax relief to commercial property.
Last session, in an effort to encourage homeowners to retrofit their homes with renewable energy devices, lawmakers sweetened the deal by promising residential homeowners they wouldn't face a property tax increase because of those improvements. Now St. Petersburg Republican Senator Jeff Brandis says he wants commercial property owners to get the same treatment.
I think it's a great idea to let commercial property owners do the same thing. They're very interested in this, and as technology evolves, it's going to make a lot of sense for many businesses to transition to solar.
Brandis is also pushing a partner bill that would rewrite the state constitution to specify the energy generated by solar panels or wind turbines should be used by the property where the device is installed. And while energy advocates say they're behind the bills, Southern Alliance for Clean Energy spokeswoman Susan Glickman says she'd like to see legislation with even more incentives.
There's a burdensome tax on individuals and businesses that happens if you want to lease solar equipment. So we'd like to take a look at that as this bill moves forward, because that would certainly unleash more job creation and more economic development.
Meanwhile, local government officials say they're keeping their eye on the bills. In cities like Tallahassee, the proposal could have a 1-2 punch. Tallahassee gets some funding from property taxes, but the majority of its budget is funded by payments to utilities the city owns. Brandis's bill could mean less money coming out of both pots. Tallahassee Chief of Staff Rick Miner acknowledged a large increase in the number of solar panels could hurt the city's bottom line, but he insists green energy is more important.
That's true, but we also have a keen interest in making sure that we're doing everything we can to promote sustainable energy and renewable energy options. And, based on our record with working with our residents, as well as our commercial customers over the last few years, I mean, we've got a record of doing that.
Miner says the city is working with the Florida League of Cities to judge what the measure's impact will be. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
You're listening to Capital Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Now here's Ronald J. Evan with a look at what's going on around the Capitol tomorrow.
The House Criminal Justice Committee meets at 9 a.m. and will take up a bill known as the Aaron Cohen Life Protection Act, named after a Miami 17-year-old cyclist killed in a 2012 hit-and-run crash. Under current Florida law, drunk drivers who kill someone receive a minimum mandatory sentence of 4 years in prison. But those who leave the scene to avoid being caught drinking face less stringent penalties. Police found evidence that the man who struck and killed Aaron Cohen had been drinking, but they could not test him because of a time lag. He was eventually sentenced to just 364 days in jail and was released after 264 days. The committee will also take up the Nursing Home Litigation Reform Bill. It spells out specific conditions under which a nursing home resident can sue a licensee or management company. Also at 9 o'clock, the Senate Subcommittee on Criminal Justice will consider Senator David Simmons' cyberbullying bill. Then at 1:30 Wednesday afternoon, the Senate Health Policy Committee will take up some major pieces of legislation, including an abortion bill that revises the circumstances under which pregnancy in the third trimester may be terminated. It also requires a physician to perform certain examinations to determine the viability of the fetus. The committee will also consider the Florida Telemedicine Act for doctors to provide consultations whether in-state or across state lines. To be decided is who pays and how much. Under the Senate bill, the standard of care must be the same for telemedicine as for that practiced in an office or hospital bed. Those are some of the major issues state lawmakers will grapple with. For Wednesday, March 5th, I'm Ronald J. Evan.
Finally tonight, Florida lawmakers may be averse to raising state taxes, but they could be a bit more friendly towards local tax hikes. The Florida Senate is looking at allowing local governments more freedom to use tax revenue to combat homelessness. Stan Jastrzebski reports on a bill heard for the first time on the opening day of the 2014 session.
The legislation is part of a triumvirate of homelessness bills from Clearwater Republican Senator Jack Latvella. It allows local option sales taxes to be used for homelessness prevention efforts, but doesn't allow local governments to exceed the 1% threshold they're currently subject to. So, if a county has already met its tax cap, there's no additional funding available to combat homelessness. Palm Beach County Legislative Affairs Director Todd Bonlaren says he hopes the bill passes because his county needs a stable funding source to address its homelessness problem, but he acknowledges it could be a tough sell to the voters who'd have to approve the increased levy.
Anytime that you look at people who you can go from utilizing, you know, government services to ones that are going to be very positive contributors to our community, I think that people understand that and it resonates with people.
The bill adds homelessness prevention efforts as the ninth class of spending local option taxes can fund. Data from the Department of Housing and Urban Development's annual homelessness assessment report to Congress show Florida has the third biggest homeless population of any state. An estimated 8% of all Floridians are homeless. More than half of them live without consistent shelter. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Stan Jastrzebski.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Sasha Cordner, Ronald J. Evan, Lynn Hatter, Stan Jastrzebski, Regan McCarthy, and Jessica Palumbo, along with Ryan Bank. We also thank our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FPR Cap Report. And join us again each weeknight during the 2014 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Tallahassee Regional Airport, offering service through U.S. Airways with direct flights from Tallahassee to Charlotte and Washington, D.C., and over 200 connections to destinations around the globe. Fares and information available online at usairways.com. Lisa Miller and Associates, offering strategies to solve legislative, regulatory, and business development challenges. Every challenge offers new opportunities for individually tailored client solutions. Online at lisamillerassociates.com. And from the Florida AFL-CIO, representing over 500,000 union members, retirees, and their families, committed to building a better future for all Floridians by promoting healthy communities, economic justice, and dignity in the workplace, online at flaflcio.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.